And maybe you can tell me how you introduce yourself to voters when you're out campaigning. What do you tell them about yourself?
I start out with, I'm Shirley Bell, and I'm running for state representative for the 110th. I tell them that I am a first-time candidate. I've never run for office before. I retired from Eastern Illinois University after teaching there for 19 years. But with 2 years without a budget, where the state actually starved its people of their own resources, that and other things that were happening in politics. Having retired, I didn't have any excuse not to run, and so I decided I had to run. We needed a representative. So that's how I got into it. It's an entirely grassroots volunteer campaign. So we have people working and volunteering their time and their talent, and that's a wonderful part. I'm very proud of that. Our donations are largely individual donations, everything from $5 to $500. There have been some groups that have contributed as well. But this is really so the people in my district, the 110th, will have a representative who talks to them, listens to them, and works for them, gets some work done.
You mentioned the budget impasse, the 2 year budget impasse, mm-hmm. which sounds like it was a big impetus for your making the decision to run.
It was.
How as a lawmaker would you try to make sure that that doesn't happen again?
The first thing that I would say is that we need to elect representatives who are committed to passing an annual budget annually. That's why it's called an annual budget, and to working together. And by working together, I mean working together in a bipartisan way, compromising, negotiating to actually solve the problem and produce a budget so that we meet our obligations, and so that everything can run, so that everything actually can run.
Do you think opportunities were missed during the budget impasse where there could have been some sort of agreement?
I think opportunities have been missed for many years. I also believe we have to solve the structural problem in the budget, and that means we have to do a number of things. We have to overhaul the entire tax system, and what I mean by the entire tax system is property taxes, income taxes, and sales taxes. And I would encourage people to be wary of people who argue for one particular tax or complain about one, oh, we have to change the income or we have to change property. We have to overhaul the entire tax system because it doesn't do any good if we save tax money on one, but we're in fact raising it on another. We have to overhaul the entire tax system. I believe that everything's on the table, spending and revenue. And we actually have to have representatives who are willing to sit down, work together, and solve the problems so that we can meet our commitments. We also have to start paying our bills on time. We are wasting a total, complete waste of money on interest charges because of bills that we did not pay on time. I just was reimbursed for my for dental work that I had done from 2015. I was reimbursed in addition to the actual reimbursement. I received a $60 check of interest from the state of Illinois. That's one person. I got $60. I talked to another friend. They got $150 in interest. That's completely wasted money. So there is waste that we could get rid of simply by solving the problem, actually getting it done.
Well, Mr. Pritzker, the Democratic candidate, is proposing a graduated income tax. Do you support that? And from what you just said, do you think that in alone is enough?
I don't think that alone is enough. But I also support a graduated income tax. And I've done some research into all of our neighboring states. There are, I think there are 8 states that have a flat tax, 7 do not have an income tax, 33 have a graduated tax. So I do support the idea of a graduated tax, but graduated income tax. But again, you have to take a look at the entire tax burden of our Illinois citizens, income, property, and real estate taxes, and sales taxes, and figure out these are the bills we have to pay. These are the obligations we are legally committed to provide. And this is the amount of money we have coming in. Sit down, work together. How are we going to make this work?
Are you talking about raises in other types of taxes, or do you think it's possible that some taxes might come down?
I think both of those things could happen. And going to a graduated income tax is not going to raise taxes on the average Illinois citizen. Middle class taxpayers will actually get a break on that. The very wealthy will. The people who earn money, remember this is an income tax, so it's only on earned income for the graduated tax, but people who earn a great deal will be taxed more heavily with a graduated tax. But I think, and I'm not advocating for any particular thing. It's also true that in Illinois, we only tax goods. We don't tax services. So sales tax is only for goods. Many of our neighboring states tax services. Iowa taxes 81 services. And so that's what I'm saying. We have to put everything on the table, and everything is up for negotiation, and we have to actually do the hard work of negotiating it and saying, how do we meet the bills, and what are our revenue sources?
Would you consider you mentioned the sales tax on services. Would you consider other tax revenue that might come from sports gambling or the legalization of recreational marijuana?
I think all of that should be considered. That's what I mean. It put everything on the table. And I'm not advocating for any one of those things, including taxing services. I'm not advocating for any one of those. Our legislators need to sit down and negotiate and see how are we going to pay our bills on time every year.
And do you think any cuts in spending need to be part of this picture?
That's what I mean when I say everything's on the table. Spending's on the table. What are we obligated to spend, and what do we want to spend our money on, as well as revenue sources being on the table?
Do you have any thoughts at this point of where specifically spending cuts might be made?
I know that if people talk a lot about waste, and we need to be monitoring for waste or fraud, those sorts of things all the time. But again, as I just said, it's an entire waste of money when we are paying interest charges on unpaid bills. That could be done away with altogether. If we have a budget every year, we won't be doing that. We'll save a ton of money that way.
The two people at the center of the state's budget fight were Governor Bruce Rauner and Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. You're a Democrat. If you're elected, it sounds like you'll have something to say about who the speaker is in the Illinois House. Will you support Mr. Madigan for speaker?
I'm not there yet. Let me first of all say I've never met Mike Madigan. I've never spoken with him. So I have no personal experience of how he approaches things or how he does things at all. The issue of speakership. There are two things, let me say, on this issue. Some people have said, are you for term limits? And my answer to that is, I don't support term limits for elected office. So whoever is elected as governor, whoever is elected as a state representative, a senator, whatever. So not for elected office. That's what we have elections for. The voters of that district get to decide who will represent them. I think that there are good arguments for term limits on leadership positions like Speaker of the House and those sorts of things. So I certainly want to look into that and consider that as well. It's also true, however, my other comment on that particular issue is I'm glad you asked the question. My opponent has made that a cornerstone of his campaign. He has a hashtag, and the hashtag is Fire Madigan. And that's what he's spending – that's one of the topics that he's very specific about. One of the few topics that he's actually very specific about is that's the cornerstone of his campaign. And I want to point out that he's made a cornerstone for his campaign of something that he can't do. It is absolutely impossible that in 2 years he can go to Springfield and fire Mike Madigan. That is not going to happen. He is unable to do. The one thing that he's got as a cornerstone of his campaign is something that he will not be able to accomplish. The voters get to decide who represents them, and the House leadership, House of Representatives, votes on who will be Speaker. So it's impossible. And my focus is on district issues, not on – and in fact, why would he do that? Why would he make fire Madigan his cornerstone? We were just in a forum last Tuesday, and he was – in an answer to climate change, my opponent said that it was all just fear-mongering. It's all a hoax, and it's all fear-mongering to get people riled up. That's exactly what the fire Mike Madigan – hashtag is, or slogan is. It's designed to get people all fired up. Mike Madigan, some people do not like Mike Madigan very well. A lot of people do not like Mike Madigan in my district, do not like him very well. So they can get all riled up about that issue, and then the district issues that we ought to be focusing on don't become the topic of the conversation. And so my opponent doesn't have to answer questions about that and doesn't have to actually offer what his plans are.
Is Mr. Madigan, is he becoming too much of a distraction for Democrats in the Illinois House?
I don't know if he is for Democrats. I would say that he certainly is a distraction for my opponent, and for the Republican Party seems to be rather distracted. And one might want to ask oneself, if the shoe were on the other foot, I'm not sure this would be such a problem for my opponent or people in the other party. And so whatever changes we might want to make about leadership positions, we have to make sure that both parties are on board for that and both parties would continue to abide by if they change the rules on provide term limits for leadership positions, that both parties agree that that's what we're going to do going forward.
Well, if you're elected and you're making a decision on a leadership position, and just names aside, what sort of leader do you want?
I want a leader in the same – using some of the criteria that – in terms of who do I want as a representative, who do I want representing me. I want somebody who – talks to their constituents, listens to their constituents. I want in a leader's case, a leader of the legislature, I want somebody who's going to talk to me as a representative and listen to my ideas and work with me. I want a leader who does everything to try to pull us together, to get work done, to get real work done. The work of state government done. My focus is on district issues, not on a national agenda. So how do we do the work? What do we do? Work together in a bipartisan way. That's what I want from a leader.
One final question about Mr. Madigan. He was in the thick of it during the budget impasse. Also in the past couple of years, he's faced allegations about questions about sexual harassment against a staff in the Illinois Democratic Party, which he is also the leader of. What do you think Mr. Madigan has learned from all of that?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him. I mean, again, I've never talked with him. I don't know what he has learned or has not learned.
According to the Illinois budget book for the current fiscal year, the state currently has $219 billion in public pension obligations, only $85 billion in assets. How do you think the state can close the pension gap?
The pension gap. The pension situation is a mess. It's because of years and years of what our state government has done. There is a plan to have the pension plan 90% funded by 2045. If that's the plan that we're going to stay with, then we need to make a commitment that we are absolutely going – our representatives are absolutely going to stay with it. It's important to note the reason why we have the pension gap, as you say, is because the state did not fulfill its obligation. It did not pay its fair share. All for many, many years, they took pension holidays. They did cost shifting so that the money that was dedicated for the pension went, in fact, to other things. And that's how we ended up with this huge gap that we are currently faced with. We must solve the pension issue. We have to do that, again, by doing hard work and working together. But this is of the state's own making, and we must honor our commitments. The state has to honor their commitments that they have made to the people who have worked for the state for all of these years. Another point on that that I think is real important that a lot of people don't understand is that for state pensioners, when you get a pension, if you've been working for the state all your life, you don't get Social Security. I will never get Social Security. I'm not vested in it because the state of Illinois opted out of the Social Security system years and years and years ago. And in lieu of that, they had to provide something in lieu of that. In lieu of that, what they did was they said, okay, we're going to pay these state pensions. So when people say, oh, these people that are getting pensions, they're getting a lot of money and we should reduce pensions, you need to understand that what you're saying is you're saying for those people – with only a state pension, you're taking away their Social Security. It's the equivalent of taking away Social Security because they may not have anything else unless they've invested in something. My opponent is advocating on Tuesday, advocated for getting, I think he said, getting these people, talking about state pensions and pensioners, getting these people into 401k plans. That is a bad idea, and especially that's a bad idea. I'm not saying don't have a 401k. I do, but I also have my pension that I earned from Eastern. But moving all of theirs into 401ks when they have no Social Security, that's financial suicide for all of these people who have worked so hard. And they have, our state workers. Oh, I can also say I have decided that I personally – I have a pension from Eastern Illinois University, taught there, well, 22 years of service, and I will not accept a second pension from the state of Illinois. I'm not saying that other people shouldn't. That's not – I'm not taking a position. There are good arguments why one might want to do that. But the pension I earned from Eastern Illinois University is sufficient, and my savings is sufficient for my needs, and so I will not be accepting, when I am elected state representative, I will not be accepting a second pension.
The proposal from your opponent with the 401k as an option, is that any connection with the so-called consideration model that was originally proposed by Senate President Cullerton that would require state employees to opt into one or two options benefits?
It's a similar kind of – it's not exactly the same plan, but it's a similar kind of plan. What you're talking about is privatizing. Instead of having a state pension, a defined benefit plan, you have a contribution plan. So you're talking about privatizing, and when you're talking about those sorts of things, you're talking about putting money into plans that are subject to the stock market. So, again, if things are good, people are making good money. If things are not good, they're losing money.
And so I gather from what you've just said that the consideration model is not something you support?
No.
Okay. Certainly not as a replacement for
– Right. Not as a replacement. If you have extra things that you want to do, that's fine, but not as a replacement for the pension.
The 2045 goal, was that part of the pension reform plan that was originally signed years ago under Governor Edgar?
No. That's a relatively recent – because of the mess that we're in. It would be a lot better if we hadn't dug the hole quite so big as has that our state government had not dug the hole quite so big as they have. But that's a plan so we'd be 90% funded by 2045.
Okay. Well, what we haven't talked about are really things particular to your district, the 110th. Are there state issues you think are most important to the 110th district and why?
Yes, and thank you. I love this question because I love talking about the district. You've hit on two already. We talk about the budget and also pensions. So those are two important issues. In addition to that, my platform is based upon a number of things that I believe are necessary to get the 110th growing again, and that's what my That's what my focus is. That's what I plan to do. We went more than two years without a budget, longest in the country's history. We have a budget now, finally. And so we need to start growing again and developing the district. To do that, the first thing, cornerstone of my campaign, is public education. And what I mean by that is pre-K through higher education. And let me say, what I mean by higher education is everything beyond high school. So a 2 or 4 year degree is a fine option, but it shouldn't be the only option. So we need to be supporting pre-K through higher ed, but that means includes support for apprenticeships, certificate, and targeted training programs so that our young people can develop the knowledge, skills, and abilities they need to get good jobs right here in the district. We have shortages here in the district of teachers, healthcare workers, but also skilled trades workers. Illinois is sixth in the country for shortage of skilled trades workers. Those are our masons, our carpenters, our plumbers, our electricians. We need those people, all of us as community members. When you need a plumber, you need a plumber. When you need your light system fixed, you need your light system fixed. So the very needs that we have, all of our community members need, can be met by our own folks right here in the district if we support them to get the education they need, an apprenticeship, whatever that is, so that they can get good jobs. And by good jobs, I mean a good job has a livable wage, it has benefits, it's stable, you're not going to get laid off in 39 weeks, and it has a path to advancement. When our young people can get that right here where they live, they can serve the needs of the community and they'll stay here. So it also kind of handles, at least addresses, the out-migration problem that we've had. And especially in our rural districts like the 110th, we have a lot of people who either are not able to or don't want to pursue a 2 or 4 year degree. That's fine. That's a wonderful option. So let's put them to work in good jobs, and so then we keep them here in our own community. So education is key. The second thing that I've focused a lot on is infrastructure. And infrastructure, I mean roads and bridges, absolutely roads and bridges, utilities, waterways, and rural broadband. Again, much of the 110th is a very rural area. And there are areas, it's not so bad in Mattoon and Charleston. We have high-speed internet in Mattoon and Charleston. But in the more rural areas, in many of the places, they don't have high-speed internet. I mean, it's very slow, and sometimes they can't get it at all. And so rural broadband for all, I mean, we do have, Annie Menard worked on the bill for rural broadband for our rural schools, and I'm supportive of that. But I'm talking about rural broadband for all the folks in the 110th. We need that so that we can be competitive, so that our people can be as competitive as people in more populated areas. I look at the rural broadband as the modern-day version of the rural electrification program of the 1930s and 1940s. It makes us, it brings us into that competitive world, everything from job applications to businesses that have to have advertisement for their products. So I include rural broadband in infrastructure. But we also need roads and bridges. Everyone, absolutely everyone in a community depends on roads. We need good roads. The farm ag community, we have farmers right now out in the harvest, bringing in our harvest of 2018, moving that equipment along poor roads. And almost in every single county I've talked, when I've talked with people, everyone is mad at some road or some bridge. I guarantee you, ask them. Oh, and they'll tell you, oh, it's the Burma Road or whatever. Because if you have to drive it regularly to get to work, to get back, to take kids to school, that costs you. It costs you money. We know average motorist pays more than $500 a year in vehicle repairs due to poor roads. And for farmers, it's even more because when that equipment breaks down, it's much more expensive. But we need good roads for schools, hospitals, business, small business, farm. Everybody depends upon the roads. And so infrastructure, investing in our infrastructure and developing, repairing our roads is critical. And the third thing that I would say that is absolutely critical for the 110th is, again, electing the kind of representative the people of the district actually want and need so that they can get those needs, their needs met. And by that, I mean somebody who's willing to talk with them, listen to their constituents, talk with them, and work with their fellow legislators in a bipartisan way, negotiate. I will be a full-time representative. I'm fully retired, so I will not be juggling any other obligation. This will be my full-time job. We need a representative who is informed on issues and can communicate, can convey those ideas. And again, I would argue that what we need, what the 110th needs, is they need a full-time representative who wants to work on district issues, who wants to just finally get some work done.
Well, Shirley Bell, thank you very much for talking with me.
Okay, thank you very much, Jim.